Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Mothball Prophecies. I am your host, Jonathan. Today, we are going to be continuing our look at the Pascagoula alien abduction incident featuring Charles Hixon and Calvin Parker. But before we get into that, we have a couple of announcements. We have a few announcements. I'll do some at the tail end of the show, but this one that I want to hit at the top is pretty important. Curious Form is a local art and design fabrication company located right here in New Orleans. They are running a GoFundMe campaign. They have the right equipment on hand and an amazing community willing to help, and they are seeking to aid the growing shortage of proper medical supplies by creating PPE face shields and masks for the medical professionals here in New Orleans. They are hoping to hit $8,400. That is their goal on the GoFundMe campaign. Currently, they are sitting at a little over $7,200. So they are almost there. They want to remind everyone that just $7 buys a shield for a medical professional here in the city. And with our new reality, we need as many people on board supplying medical professionals so that they can keep us all safe. So I'll put a link in the show notes. If you can even throw a dollar their way, it would help them out tremendously. So with that said, let's get back into the Pascagoula incident. For those of you just joining on episode 2, I would encourage you to stop and go back to last week's episode. But if you want a short recap, here it goes. Back in 1973, 41-year-old Charles Hixon and 19-year-old Calvin Parker were out late one night together fishing on the banks of the Pascagoula River when they saw a weird craft settle on the water, and beings came out and took them aboard. They went through hypnotic regression sessions and recalled being abducted by aliens. And the media took this and ran with it, and it became a national sensation, as were other alien abduction stories at the time. About half a year later, Charles Hixon was out hunting, broad daylight, middle of the day, and he saw a ship hovering above the trees. And as he looked to observe the ship, he heard a voice just appear in his head. And the voice said, "We mean you no harm. We mean no one any harm. You may communicate with us later. You have endured. You have been chosen. There is no need to fear. We will communicate again." And then the ship disappeared, and the voice went away. And this being the second time Charles Hixon was observing an alien craft, he started to feel that he was being chosen for something. He didn't immediately report the sighting because he didn't want the news people swarming all over him like what happened the first time. So he sat on this, and in April of 1976, Charles Hixon once again underwent hypnotic regression to relive the experience of when he was out hunting in January of 74. The session under hypnosis was almost identical to what he wrote down after his hunting incident, with two big differences. Instead of the voice saying, "We mean no one any harm," Charlie said the sentence was, "We mean you no harm." And the second big point was, under hypnotic regression, he made no mention of having been chosen or having endured. However, the part about returning was mentioned both times while conscious and under hypnosis. And return they did. In February of 1974, Hixon was fishing again late at night, this time by himself, and he heard the voice again. It said, "You must tell the world we mean no harm. Your world needs help. We will help in the future before it's too late. You are not prepared to understand this yet. We will return again soon." Well, this was very strange because once is strange. Twice, it's a little stranger. Third time, we're beginning to see a trend. So Charlie decided to once again go under hypnosis. And while the UFO researcher, I'm not going to say it's a licensed therapist because I couldn't quite suss that out in the research, but the UFO researcher was asking him about this and what Charlie was seeing when he heard the voice, and he suddenly became unable to speak about the details, which went contrary to anything he'd said up to this point about previous incidents. When he came out of hypnosis, he said he saw a bright light in front of his face, and he even asked the hypnotist if he was shining a bright light in his eyes. There were no bright lights in the room. But the conclusion was that someone or something was preventing Charlie from talking about the incident. We've heard this in other UFO abduction cases where the person has mental blocks or sees owl imagery or something else that prevents them from seeing or recalling their perceived truth. But you also have to remember, this is the early to mid-70s, so Charlie's case is kind of a forerunner to everything we heard or read about in the 80s, 90s, and even to this day. So, much like the hunting incident, there were no witnesses, and this experience was never revisited as far as I can tell. I've checked out multiple books about the Pascagoula incident, and I cannot find anyone putting Charlie under to relive this particular contact or Charlie talking about it again in any interviews. However, if we fast forward a few months to Mother's Day, May 12th of 1974, the situation was very different. Charlie had another encounter, and this time there were five witnesses. On this date, Charlie took his family up north to visit his parents on their farm. Charlie and his dad admired the bulls while Charlie's dad tried to convince him to move away from the big city life in Pascagoula and return to the farm. Charlie really enjoyed being around his family and his extended family at this large gathering. After the Mother's Day celebration, Charlie, his wife Blanche, his daughter Sheila, Sheila's husband Kenny, their daughter, Kenny's younger brother, and Charlie's son Kurt, and Charlie's baby daughter, all piled into their vehicle and headed home along Highway 67. You have to remember that this was the early to mid-70s, so even basic family cars were pretty much the size of an ocean liner. Off in the distance as they were driving home, they saw a light. And the light kept coming closer and closer, and then it kept pace with the car, and Charlie's wife started screaming and shaking. They stopped the car. Everyone stopped and observed this light. The light moved across the highway, lighting up the entire area. Charlie saw that it was more than just a light, though. It was a craft, which he gauged to be around 100 feet in length, and it had a row of windows. Charlie immediately told his family, "I must go. The beings are aboard, and I must meet them." Then, Charlie heard that weird voice inside his head again. It said, "Go. There will be another time, another place." Here's looking at you, kid. But Kenny wanted to call the Air Force base. You have to remember, Kenny was Charlie's daughter's husband. He wanted to call the Air Force base, and Charlie immediately said, No, don't do that, because the last time he did that, it was all for naught. And by the time he left the Air Force base, the media was waiting outside for him. So everyone went home. The next morning, Charlie's wife Blanche woke him up and begged him not to go back to that place where they saw the craft the night before. Charlie, however, was determined to go back to see if there was any evidence of the craft, like markings on the ground or patches of burnt grass or anything else he probably heard about when he was discussing his particular case with APRO or J. Allen Hynek. I mean, all this time, going back to the hunting expedition where he saw a craft in broad daylight and first heard the voice, Charlie was wondering what these aliens had to tell him that was so important. So, once again, he went under hypnosis, and so did every adult who was in the car. Under hypnosis, Kenny recalled the light, the craft, and the row of windows. Blanche, Charlie's wife, even had the same recollection. So, what are we left with? Charles Hixon and Calvin Parker believe they saw something and encountered beings. Charlie's family witnessed a craft descend upon their car, and each one had the same story when interviewed separately. Dr. J. Allen Hynek, a nuts and bolts UFO guy who was previously in charge of Project Blue Book as a debunker, also believed Charlie Hixon's story. So, was this experience real? Were any of the experiences real? Well, actually, there are a few things that really bother me about Charles Hixon's story. The first thing was the voice. If we are playing by the rules and the evidence that has been presented to us, then this voice that appeared in Charlie's head was able to communicate with him. At least one way it was able to communicate with him. Why then could the beings not communicate to him what it was that was so important? If our planet was going to be saved before it was too late, they certainly have not shown up yet. They haven't picked anyone else to communicate with, and if they have, that person is not coming forward. And understandably so. If they could put visuals in his mind, much like the light that was keeping him from seeing what happened to him back in February of 74, why couldn't they show him what was so important? Introducing a voice which can only be experienced by one person is admittedly suspicious, and you'll see that in other abduction cases, very much like the Gulf Breeze incident that happened in the 80s. The second thing that really bothered me as I was doing research for these episodes was that after one of Charlie's television appearances, he received a letter from Betty Hill. For those of you who don't know, Betty Hill was one half of the married couple, Betty and Barney Hill. They were the first known abductees in the U.S. in the early 60s. So he received a letter from her, and then he went to visit her. This was shortly after the first experience that he went. I'm not trying to take anything away from the claims of Charles Hixon. I just want to point out that the exchange of ideas between two people who had seemingly similar experiences may have resulted in a confabulation of facts, at least on some level. The first craft Charlie saw looked like a football with two lights, or like blue-green lights. After meeting Betty Hill, the sighting on Route 67 was a craft with a row of windows, much like the one described by Betty and Barney Hill under hypnosis. But the sighting on Route 67 was experienced by five people, and at least four of them had no idea who Betty and Barney Hill were. The UFO incident, the movie based on the Hill abduction, hadn't even come out yet. It wasn't released until 1975, and this experience on the highway was in 74. So it's not like they were influenced by that. Close Encounters hadn't even been released. So we're still left with at least two sightings with multiple witnesses. Fast forward a little bit to the 1980s. Charles Hixon went under hypnotic regression by Bud Hopkins, who at the time was one of the leading UFO investigators in the United States, possibly the world. By the mid-90s, Bud Hopkins had uncovered hundreds of abductee cases. With Charlie, he discovered that he had been having alien encounters since he was a little kid, and even into his teens, complete with examinations, needles floating through walls, all of that. While I find alien abduction stories to be interesting, I always find it odd, looking back over those cases where Bud Hopkins is involved, that Bud seems to draw out the same results from what was at the time his growing pool of alien abductees. Everyone who goes under hypnotic regression with Bud Hopkins finds out that they've had these abduction incidents going back since they were little kids. Sometimes it exists generationally in families, but that's Bud Hopkins. I'm not saying that he was working with a conclusion and finding evidence to support it. I'm just saying that's what Bud Hopkins' research revealed. What I did find interesting was that Philip Klass, who, if you don't know Philip Klass, Philip Klass was a loudmouthed UFO debunker. Not a skeptic. He built a career in the 70s, 80s, and I think 90s, just going after people who claimed that they had seen something out of the ordinary and wouldn't necessarily look for evidence first. He would dig up things about their personal lives and make disparaging attacks on their personal character. So Philip Klass couldn't really find anything to disprove the experience Charlie and Calvin had. He made mention in his files that Calvin, get this, may have dropped LSD before going fishing, which makes no sense to me, considering that both had to be up early to be at work, both, by all accounts, were very diligent workers, and Calvin Parker really didn't do anything illicit. He was a self-confessed lightweight, even with alcohol, and people who knew him said that he didn't even drink. But regardless of if he did or did not do LSD right before the fishing incident, it wouldn't explain what Charles Hixon said happened to him. Now, Philip Klass went on to say that Charlie had a couple of shots after arriving at the sheriff's department, but he reported the story before he had those drinks. Klass even attacked James Harder of APRO and Dr. J. Allen Hynek of Project Blue Book fame for believing Charlie and Calvin, and along with the polygraph reports. Klass even said that Charles Hixon made this all up for money, pointing to books, TV appearances, and a meeting with Gene Dixon, psychic to the stars. The truth is, Charlie, as we mentioned earlier, never really received money for talking about his abduction story. When you take away the personal attacks and the irrelevant attempts to defame Charles Hixon's character, Philip J. Klass couldn't point to a damn thing. As to whether or not there was an abduction involving aliens or messages from another world beamed directly into Charles Hixon's head, we'll never know. Even with all of the supposed witnesses who came out of the woodwork over the decades, claiming everything from seeing the UFO in Pascagoula on the night of October 11th, 1973, to receiving astral messages from the aliens that night, we will never know. And really, that's where the story ends. Charles Hixon died in 2011. Calvin Parker is still alive. He put out a couple of books after many years of silence, but if you go through them, it's mostly about the other witnesses who saw the same UFO he did in 1973, and a lot of article clippings and pictures. And the books are mostly a tribute to his deceased friend, Charles Hixon, more than anything else. There's nothing really new about Calvin's personal experiences, except that under more recent hypnosis, he remembered being contacted by an alien woman when he was a child. While that's a new detail, it really reveals nothing about what happened in 1973 on the banks of the Pascagoula River. And really, we're never going to know. We will never know what actually happened that night. And that pretty much wraps it up for part two of the Pascagoula alien abduction case of Charles Hixon and Calvin Parker. Next week, we will return to our home base in Louisiana and explore cryptozoological curiosity and some general weirdness on the outskirts of the Crescent City of New Orleans. As always, if you like this episode, please share it with your friends. You can also follow the Mothball Prophecies Facebook page and join our new community to get access to some bonus material that isn't available anywhere else. We also host a weekly storytelling adventure. Everything you hear from the Mothball Prophecies is free, but if you felt entertained tonight or on any other episodes and think it was worth a buck or two, please send that love to the Venmo account in the show notes or on our Facebook page. So next week, get ready for some deep weirdness. Until then, sleep tight.